This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass, powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass podcast. Today is Monday, April 29th. My name is Rick Butler, joined as always by my good friend, your good friend, Ryan Shumpert, across the virtual room, who, by the way, is pulling double duty. I believe you just had the baseball version of the RTI Press Pass with our other coworker, Jack Foster, just about an hour or two ago. How are you doing today on this Monday after a quite the wild week in Tennessee Athletics last week?
Yeah, doing well. You're probably 2 hours ago, I think, about when we recorded the podcast. So got everything need to know about Tennessee's series sweep of Missouri, and then looking ahead to this weekend series at Florida. And yeah, doing well.
And this one is a coming up this weekend for the Florida series. It's another Thursday, Friday, Saturday one. So Sunday's off.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
Though there the Saturday go, game is a night game. I think like 7 o'clock first pitch. Usually if it's a, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the Saturday game's during the day, but not the case this week.
Yeah, you can tell if that game goes to a third game in the series, if they split the first two games, you can imagine that that ballpark will be rocking on a Saturday night in Gainesville. So, of course, go ahead and check out the baseball version of the RTI Press Pass with Ryan and Jack. As you get done with this podcast, they will get you set and loaded for the weekend. But otherwise, Ryan, you and I have a little bit of basketball to talk about. I mentioned a wild week last week. I sort of left you alone for it. I took my spring break vacation. I was gone for a few days. And sure enough, those days that I were gone, Tennessee gets a commitment from an Ohio State center. Tennessee gets another commitment from a Charlotte forward today. We'll tell you about those. So that's going to be the bulk of the podcast today. We're going to sort of be talking about Tennessee's two additions from the transfer portal on the basketball court, just what that means. You also, I believe, got to talk with Felix Akpara last week and get a little bit of his thoughts about why Tennessee was the case. So we will tell you all about that stuff as we go. Then I think we're going to get in some quick hitters, maybe some NFL draft conversation. 12 Tennessee players going to the league, 3 of them via the draft, 9 of them being undrafted free agents. Your Tennessee Titans got a pair of Tennessee Vols as well. So I'm sure people in state were happy to see that those names are getting a chance over in Nashville. So just sort of rounding out the week in Tennessee Athletics at the end. But of course, we have two big basketball names to talk about. Are you ready to go, my friend, here on a nice, it's a really sunny, hot Monday afternoon. I mean, I think we've fairly turned the corner into non-sweatshirt weather, as I'm sort of sweating up a storm here as I wear this sweatshirt myself.
I'm getting a bit of deja vu because Jack basically said the same thing on the baseball podcast. He said, I think we finally turned the corner and we're not going to get any more of these random cold days pop up. But you're right. Yeah, it feels that way. And I'm ready to roll.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start with the news last week. And then we'll obviously move into today's news here on Monday. But I'm going to sort of turn this over to you more because you handled so much of it. But Tennessee lands a commitment from Ohio State center Felix Akpara. Now, this is a really interesting guy. He is a stout rim protector, a guy who shoots nearly 90% of his shots from right there at the rim. So he is a true big man, a true put him in the paint and see what he's got, and really an offensive, efficient player in what he can do just from an all-around standpoint on that end, whether it comes to rebounding, rim protecting, able to make shots at the rim. What exactly is Tennessee getting with the addition of Felix Akpara?
Well, a 2 years of eligibility to start. This is a guy that started 34 or 35 games for Ohio State last season, averaged 6.5 points or 6.6 points, 6.4 rebounds, 2.4 blocks a game. And I think that's what stands out most is just what he brings on a defensive end. He's just an elite rim protector. His block rate would have ranked, you know, higher than either way higher than Tobey Awaka and also higher than Jonas Adu, who was a good shot blocker as well. So yeah, 10.2% ranked 18th in the country last year. He blocked something like 80 shots. The amount of shots he blocked last year would have been a Tennessee program record. And that's obviously with, you know, Ohio State. I think they made it to the NIT, so they maybe played a game or two there, but not a super deep run in the tournament or anything like that. He was one of 6 players in the country, or maybe it was 5 players, 5 or 6 players in the country that blocked 80 shots last year. The others, Ryan Kalkbrenner at Creighton, Donovan Klingon at Connecticut, Zach Edey at Purdue, and then Big Clifford at Rutgers, who might be transferring in the conference. I know he's down visiting Alabama today. So I think it was those five. So just a elite, elite company when it comes to rim protection, a good rebounder, solid on the offensive end, really just as you kind of expect for a 6'11", 235-pound guy. And then offensively, a little bit limited at this point. I mean, he's good, you know, as you'd expect, a good dunker, a really good lob threat, or just as a really good athlete. But at this point in his career, as the youths would say, not a ton of bag, not too much of an offensive bag, not a bunch of post moves, not really any range. He doesn't really shoot any sort of jump shots. Like you said, I can't remember the exact number, but the vast, vast majority of his shots just coming right in the paint, right at the basket. Shot 59% from the foul line last year. So not a ton of back-to-the-basket game, not a guy you're going to throw the ball down low to and expect him to get baskets, not a guy that's going to come out and shoot the 15 to 18 footer, but a guy that is elite on the defensive end, good rebounder, and is good at grabbing those boards, finishing, and kind of catching those passes around the basket and in tight spaces and finishing facing the basket.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, 6'11". Obviously, Tennessee bringing in some size with both Jonas Adu and Tobe Awaka going to the portal. But I'll tell you what I like about Felix, other than his name, because I think that Felix is just a great name, especially for an athlete. I think that's a good one. But I like that he brings a little bit of versatility to Tennessee. And like you had said, maybe his offensive game isn't completely polished. And that was something he actually told you about in your interview. Not that I have to remind you about it, but he said that, hey, the coaching staff was really honest with me. They sat me down and they told me where, you know, I wasn't great at and why they're going to improve those areas. So Tennessee was obviously very open and honest with Felix during that recruitment. But what I like about that is that Tennessee does have a little bit of versatility with their big men now. They do have one of these true centers that you put right there in the paint. He's a lob threat. He's a threat to dunk it. Maybe a guy like Zakai Ziegler, I can already see sort of those dashes through the lane. He draws the big man defender and then figures out a way to just sort of dish off the pass for the easy dunk right there. I like all those things, but it also adds into just the mix of offensive sort of skill set that Tennessee already has. JP Estrell, I think, has a little bit maybe more of that finesse that you were talking about. So, and then the guy that we'll talk about next with Igor Milicic, he's got some of that to his game too, I believe. So I like that Tennessee is, you know, they're adding different components, and we'll see how all those things mesh together for the season. Obviously, a lot of new players coming together to figure out this thing out during the offseason. But I like that Tennessee's got a couple of guys who can do different things right there, and that with Felix, they really do have that true center. That's the redwood tree in the middle of the court that can not only stop the ball on defense, but who can be there just as a rim guy for again, Zakai Ziegler moving down, any of these guards sort of crashing down, they can get him the ball right there in the paint.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Just that his game blends really well with JP Estrella, with their strengths and weaknesses. You know, Estrella was, again, it's hard to say exactly, you know, you look at the numbers and stuff, because Estrella didn't play a ton of minutes last year.
Sure.
But it wasn't a great shot blocker. And not that he was bad defensively, but not a strength. But offensively, really skilled. You know, a guy you can throw the ball down to with his back to the basket, a talented scorer. So those two players' games, I think, kind of mesh well, and it gives Tennessee somewhat of a different look, and kind of in somewhat of the same way that Tobe Awaka and Jonas Adu had a little bit different look today they brought to the court. So I like that. And then, yeah, I wrote a story on it last week that you can find over at RockyTopInsider.com, but just how Felix Akpara compares to Jonas Adu and Tobe Awaka. Just taking a look at, really looking at a lot of the numbers, a lot of the advanced metrics, and how he compares to those guys, what he does better, what he does worse. And it's kind of, you know, matched up with a lot of what we said, not as good as an offensive threat, but better defensively than either of those guys. So I took a deep dive into some of the specifics with that, and a lot of stuff to look at there.
Yeah, and that was a really good article. I'd really recommend everyone going to find it, because you go through so many different metrics, both offensive and defensive, comparing that trio of guys. And it's not hard to find. If you just go over to the Rocky Top Insider webpage, that article that you're talking about was the number one most viewed article on our website in the last week. So obviously, it's certainly letting the people know what they need to do. And I think the people are really receptive to that as well. So I'd highly recommend and encourage going to seek out that article. But again, an interesting piece that Tennessee adds nonetheless. You said, again, he said 2 years of eligibility. Is that correct?
2 years of eligibility. Yep. Played first two seasons at Ohio State with, you know, now anybody that this is the last year that anybody would be a COVID guy, and Tennessee now has two of them. And Darlin Stone Dubar, who's a fifth year COVID guy, and Igor Milicic, we'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. But yeah, so anybody that's not going to be a COVID senior this year, it's back to being straightforward.
There you go. Let's see. Again, we talked about how, again, 90% from the 90% of his attempts come at the rim. I think that's a crazy high number, but again, it gives you a really good illustration to just what his game is. Last year at Ohio State, and I believe just about 24 minutes per game, if I'm remembering that correctly, 6.6 points per game, 6.4 rebounds per game, 0.5 assists per game. So, man, maybe this is a guy who if he certainly – if he finds a stretch, if he finds a particular role at Tennessee's offense, I think he could even potentially be a nightly double-double watch sort of guy, depending on if he gets those numbers. We'll have to see. But obviously, he's a guy who can certainly rack up those rebounds and who should be able to find points with this Tennessee offense. Just thinking about, again, how Zakai Ziegler factors into the fold from the point guard position. Anything else on Felix Akpara before we move on to Monday's big commitment with Igor Milicic?
Yeah, a couple things. Starting just with what you were just talking about with the minutes and stuff. You know, fouling will be something to watch. And I have it in the article. I don't remember exactly what the number is. So not like a huge foul trouble issue, but I think he averaged something like 4.9 fouls per 40 minutes last season, which was kind of right in between. I think Jonas Adu was like 3.3 and Tobe Awaka was 7.5, 7.6. So that'll be something to watch for sure. And then I think kind of in the broader scheme, you know, most of the people Tennessee's targeted in the portal have been more offensive first players, which I like. I think that's smart. But I think this was a spot Tennessee needed to get somebody defensively. And I think for Tennessee's sake, I feel really good about the fact you pair Akpara with what Tennessee has back into Zakai Ziegler and Jemai Meshack. This should be a really good defense again. And then just some connections. I mean, we'd written about this before he committed, before he came on his visit. I mean, Tennessee was just a natural option for Akpara. He is was Nigeria, I believe. Yeah, a Nigerian native, but moved to the United States before his freshman year of high school. He lived in Chattanooga, went to Hamilton Heights. His host family, his parents went to Tennessee. I think his younger brother in the host family is going to be a freshman at Tennessee this year. And you know, obviously host family going to be close either way, but he's very close to that family. When I talked to him, he called them his parents, his mom and his dad. So really, really close there. Also he played his first 3 years at Hamilton Heights in Chattanooga, his last year at Link Academy, where he was teammates with Cam Carr, who's obviously a rising sophomore for Tennessee. He talked about talking to Cam Carr before he came on his visit. And then, you know, Tennessee did recruit him too out of high school. He didn't end up going to Tennessee, but they recruited him there. And he talked about Brian Lentz, who's Tennessee's director of player development. And as we see at practice, when we get to watch, he's down there, he's working with the big men. Him and Greg Polinski are always the two coaches working with the big men. Just talking about how Lentz had built a really good relationship with his dad when he was recruiting him, and that, you know, relationship had kind of been maintained, and they'd stayed in touch some over the last few years. So a lot of connections. And when you talk about a guy that entered a transfer portal, I believe on a Sunday morning, visited Tennessee on a Tuesday, and had publicly committed by Thursday morning, it obviously moved really quick. And I think that was a lot of the reason why there were a lot of connections there.
Yeah, it sounded like obviously the visit went well, the connections that you talked about. There's a picture in one of the articles that you've written about Felix, and his family is in that picture, and it's a great picture. It's great to see, and I think you could tell that. Now, I will ask you this. Was there any sort of, when you were talking to him, is there any sort of indication just sort of what his personality was like? Is he a, you know, does it seem like a business as usual kind of guy? Not that that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, especially for players like that. But did you get any hints about what that might be like?
Yeah, I mean, that can kind of be hard to decipher in a, you know, just like a phone call interview like that was. But I will say, you know, the one thing I was curious about is just like how clean his English would be, having, you know, moved to the United States when he was already in high school. But no, he spoke really well English. His English was really good, really well. I don't know. I clearly can't speak good English. I'm supposed to be doing this for my job. So yeah, he spoke well. I thought he gave good answers, not like just, you know, and talking about a guy at Tennessee lost, not like Tobe Awaka, who was really profound and would give really long answers and stuff like that. But he was, you know, to the point, gave good answers and was clearly a very, very nice kid and was happy to give me some of his time. So I think certainly a guy that, that Tennessee fans will enjoy. And I'm sure his personality will show a lot more over the course of a 35-game season with his teammates and all that stuff than just a five-minute phone call or whatever it was for myself.
Yeah, I hear you. And the only reason I asked that was just because, you know, while we were talking about his family and, you know, just sort of the different routes that he took with that host family, it just sort of got me onto the fact of thinking, you know, culture has been a big conversation with this Tennessee basketball program, and not that it isn't at other places as well, but I think you've really seen what this culture has been and how it's grown. And a lot of the players off of last season's team continually talked about how they were able to unite through so many tough times because of that love that they had for each other. And obviously having a guy like that, I think only adds to the mix despite the turnover. So things probably trending in the right direction right there. What do you say we move on to the other commitment that Tennessee got, and that was on Monday morning with Charlotte forward Igor Milicic Jr., 6'10". And let's stop right there, right? Jonas Adu leaves, Tobe Awaka leaves. Tennessee adds some height to these three players that they brought in. D'Stone Dubar, 6'8". We just mentioned Felix Oxpar at 6'11", and Igor Milicic Jr. at 6'10". I think you wrote in one of your articles a good stretch four, which is exactly what he looked like. I think in some of the highlights from Charlotte, he played the last two seasons with the 49ers. Last season, he finishes averaging with 12.8 points per game, 8.5 rebounds per game, and 1.7 assists per game. I talked about it with the potential of Felix, but he definitely hit it during his last season at Charlotte. He was sort of a nightly double-double point rebound watch type of guy. I believe he hit double-digit scoring in 20 of his 31 games with the 49ers last season, and I believe about 10 of those were point rebound double-doubles as well. So a guy who's active around the paint, a guy who's active on the glass, but a guy who can definitely score the ball, versatile inside the paint. I want to say flexible, not in terms of, you know, contortionism, but just flexible in what he can do with his offense, and then he can step back and hit the three-pointer as well. What exactly is Tennessee getting with a commitment from Igor Milicic Jr. from Charlotte, the Croatian, I believe it is?
Yeah, no, I would start with, you know, you talk about the height, 6'10". You hear that, you probably think center. Not a center. Definitely a, you know, a stretch four, a guy that can play the wing a little bit, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him play some center in some short stints, you know, foul trouble or certain matchups the way it presents. It certainly gives Tennessee a good, you know, small ball center, but a guy I think will spend the majority of his time at the four spot. And yeah, just a really good shooter. You talk about a guy that kind of flirted with, you know, a 40 season, not 50.
80.
Yeah, not 90. It wasn't 90, but, you know, just shy of 50% from the field, just shy of 40% from three-point line. And that was on, you know, something like, I believe, 8.5 field goal attempts per game. And then also, let's see, where is it here? Yeah, 4.8 three-point attempts a game. So he took a lot of shots. And you know, the kind of advanced shooting metrics really liked him. Is 59.8% estimated field goal percentage, 83rd nationally, and then 63.7% true shooting percentage, ranked 49th nationally. So really good, really efficient scorer. And I think you just talk about a guy with some size that can also shoot the ball really well. I said it. I don't know if I said it because I can't remember what you do all these. We do all these podcasts and radio hits, but I know I wrote it for sure. And I probably said it on here when we were talking about right when the season ended, what did Tennessee need? And you talked about somebody, I said, either, you know, a true wing that has enough versatility that they can kind of play to four and shoot a three pointer well, or a true stretch four who can hit over 33s, you know, over the course of the season, and be able to kind of hold up and stretch the floor for Tennessee. Tennessee really added two of them. Dubar, obviously a more true kind of three spot, but a guy that has some versatility and can play to four, shot 40% from three. And now Milicic is, who I said is a true stretch four, hit 56 three-pointers last season at Charlotte. And it, again, Milicic has versatility, but adding multiple guys like that, and you kind of look at the pieces Tennessee's added, I think Tennessee will be able to, again, have a lot of versatility in how they play next season.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's interesting when you watch his game. We wrote about it over on RTI, but it's one of those things that's easy to see when you watch some of his highlight compilations. but he's a very big catch and shoot guy. When it comes to that perimeter shooting, not necessarily a mid-range guy, but he is a guy who he can flash some finesse moves in the paint. And I saw a couple of those where, you know, he can get his defender on a certain hip and he can kind of swivel around it. He's swift-footed on his feet. I think that's a little bit redundant to say swift-footed on his feet, but he's got swift feet. That's probably the better way to say it. So it's interesting watching his game and seeing what he could potentially bring to the table. Now, I want to kind of bounce off something that you just said right there. And it was Chris Dortch who posted this on social media today. I really like what he says here, and I want to get your reaction to it as well, just sort of break this down. But his tweet today, again, from Chris Dortch said, "Notice how Tennessee basketball are stacking up three-point shooters and guys who can finish at the rim. When the Vols got beat last year, it seems like every game started with a bunch of missed chippies. Then they forced threes to get back. Problem solved." That's something that we talked about, you know, again, during those losses. That was evident, is that Tennessee was missing at the rim. It just wasn't always efficient. Foul trouble sort of got in the way. What do you think of that tweet and just sort of the way that Tennessee has added some of these big players, guys that are efficient at the rim and guys who certainly have a knack for scoring in the paint?
Yeah, I mean, I think the paint one, I'm not sure I necessarily would put the huge emphasis on that. I mean, obviously, Okpara does that. You know, that's where he scores at, and he's shot 59%. So he's definitely a little more efficient than Jonas Adu. And I think certainly Dubar and Milicic were strong, solid scorers at the basket. But to me, those two are a little more wait and see. To me, those two are the shooting's what stands out offensively about those guys. And I mean, we talked about that too in our first podcast after season, that if you look at how many made three-pointers Tennessee lost on last year's team, they needed to add shooting. And I think both those guys, you know, will do that. But they also, you know, in the AAC, which Charlotte's in now, is a solid league. It's not a terrible league by any means. And Hofstra's obviously in a smaller league. So what rate those guys score at the basket, to me, will be interesting, especially because they don't do it a ton off the dribble. You know, it's not like a Dalton Connect, who was a 6'7" wing, but handled the ball a ton and drove to the basket and scored a lot in Northern Colorado. Really, neither of those guys, especially Dubar, puts the ball on the floor a lot and scores. They score a lot on cuts, and I'm sure they'll be able to do that to some extent too. How well, you know, to me remains to be seen as they play against a bigger, more athletic conference. But yeah, no, definitely added that with Okpara, and then the shooting aspect of it with Milicic and Dubar really stands out to me.
You mentioned that when you hear 6'10", you know, most of us immediately think of the center position. We talked about how he's a stretch four, but when you have some height like that, it obviously means you have a lot of length to go along with it. I think that really benefits his game on the defensive end, and he does certainly bring a defensive presence to Tennessee. Now, it might not be an all-around standout complete defensive game, but it's a really effective one that will only continue to grow once he gets on the Tennessee basketball court with this coaching staff. I think that's one of those areas that you see being really good already, but can maybe get taken to that next level once he gets in this Tennessee system.
I completely agree. I mean, I talked about it a minute ago about most of these guys being more offensive minded, and Milicic falls under that boat, but I'm right. Really intrigued by what he can do defensively. I mean, I know he's 6'10", but to not be a true five man and to have a 3.8 block percentage that ranked in the top 300 in the country last year, that was impressive. Super long arms. He's versatile defensively, as you'd expect for a guy like that. He's athletic. You know, he is an athletic guy. It's a guy that's something we haven't really mentioned yet. I do think he's a good athlete. So that's really intriguing to me. And, you know, looking at one thing I was curious to look at earlier today when I was writing the story of kind of how Milicic fits, according to evanmiakawa.com, is defensive performance rating was a 1.23 last year, which is solid, not spectacular by any means. You know, would have ranked pretty low amongst Tennessee's rotational players, but I thought it was interesting. I went back and looked at what Dalton Connect and Jordan Gainey's defensive performance rating was the year before they got to Tennessee. And Jordan Gainey was 0.32. And Dalton Connect was negative 1.41. So significantly, you know, both those guys turned into defenders that ranked about as high as Milicic did this past season. But they started at much lower levels when they got to Tennessee. So when you talk about some of the tools this guy has, and obviously the commitment he will have to have towards defense playing for Rick Barnes. I think there's a lot of reasons to be really excited about what he could bring Tennessee on the defensive end.
Yeah, and you talk about the athleticism. That was another part that stuck out to me just sort of when getting familiar with this guy is, man, transition game. You know, if he's out in the right spot, not only can it be again, we talked about those catch and shoot three-pointers. We talked about how he does shoot a lot of three-pointers. Not only can that be an effective spot, but he can also get to the rim in transition as well. Whether he gets that pass close to the rim or whatever, there's been some nasty highlights out there where he can throw down a posterizing dunk as well. So, you know, maybe losing a guy like Santiago Vescovi didn't necessarily have that quality. Certainly Igor Milicic Jr. can throw it down with the best of them, which again is going to be another exciting aspect of his game to see. And I think that's ultimately just what I get with these three Tennessee transfers. And again, we haven't talked about D-Stone Dubar today. That's because we talked about in the last podcast, but I think that each one of them bring a couple of really interesting skill sets to the table. Some of them that Tennessee needed, some of them that Tennessee had last year, but lost with some of these departures, others of them that Tennessee just could benefit from. But I think each one of them brings a certain skill set that can be elevated to Tennessee. Obviously, we don't know how these things are going to shake out. We don't know how all these rotations are going to go, how minutes are going to be distributed and things like that. But I like what Tennessee has done so far in the portal. I like adding all this size. I think that's important for Tennessee to do. I think when you talk about guys like Jordan Ganey, Jemai Meshack, Zakai Ziegler at the guard position already, yeah, get them some big guys to be able to feed, to be able to work with in pick and roll games, pick and pop games. I like the size and the versatility that comes with that size from this trio of players that Tennessee has added.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a lot of length, a lot of versatility, and they've addressed, you know, the big need we talked about with losing Josiah Jordan James, really with two guys, and they kind of hit that shooting need as well. And we talked about maybe adding just another additional really good shooter. Both those guys that they replaced Josiah with are good shooters or could potentially, you know, fill into that Josiah Jordan James starting role. And then, yeah, obviously, we recorded that right when the season ended. We didn't know about Jonas Adu and Tobey Awoke entering the portal, but I think Tennessee found about as strong as a replacement for those two guys as they could. And then obviously JP Estrella, a guy that the coaches have a lot of trust in, will fill in to that other spot. And that'll kind of be Tennessee's 1-2 tandem at the center spot next season.
Now, is there anything else? I know just a couple of days ago, maybe about 4 or 5 days ago, before these two commitments, so before Felix Akpara, before Igor Milicic Jr., you had written an article about just sort of what's next for Tennessee basketball in the portal. Do you suspect that Tennessee is done here? Do you expect that there could be guys on the radar? How's the roster shape? I mean, this might be at the limit, and I just haven't fully done all the math yet, considering the Vols are also going to get an addition with Bishop Boswell, a 4-star recruit from the recruiting class. Is this it for Tennessee? What's sort of next?
Yeah, no, actually, I wrote that between Akpara and Milicic.
Okay, but, okay.
No, they got 3 scholarships left now to work with. And I think the big name, by far Tennessee's biggest target left on the board, is Chaz Lanier, the 6'3 shooting guard from down in North Florida. One of, if not the very best scorer in the transfer portal, averaged 19.7 points per game last year, shot 51% from the field, 44% from three-point range, 88% from the foul line. Just an elite scorer. Nashville native, played at Innsworth School. I know Jordan Bone and Josh Bone, who both played at Tennessee, have a prior relationship with him, have been talking highly about Rick Barnes to him. So that's kind of the next name. Though I don't necessarily think it's going to be anything imminent there. He had declared for the NBA draft and was going through that process. I don't think he would have even entered the transfer portal yet, because there was a rule change last week that became official before. And the transfer portal closes. Tomorrow's the last day it's open, the end of the month. Obviously, if you're in the portal, you can still commit, but no one else can enter. Prior to a rule change last week, grad transfers did not have to be in the portal before that deadline. That rule changed now. Even if you're a grad transfer, if you're going to enter the portal, you have to do it before the deadline closes. So he jumps in late last week. I want to say that was Thursday, shortly after that rule was changed. If that rule hadn't been changed, I don't think he would have entered yet. I think for the time being, his focus is still on going through the NBA draft process, getting feedback there. You know, I certainly wouldn't say there's no chance he goes pro, but I think most likely he will come back to college for another year, transfer somewhere and do what Dalton Connect did, show that he can do it at a big level school. And I think Tennessee is going to be serious players there. If not, you know, maybe the early leader. Maryland's another name I've heard mentioned. Jacoby Gillespie, who was a transfer from Belmont to Maryland, is another guy from the state of Tennessee. I think they had some ties, you know, maybe playing some AAU together or against each other or just running in the same circles. So those are some names to watch. And Lanier, I think, is the top target for Tennessee in the transfer portal right now. Though, again, I don't think expect anything super imminent or a whole lot of movement in his recruitment over the next week, 2 weeks. And then Tennessee has two other spots, but, you know, that's the thing is you got 13 scholarships and your rotation is not going to be 13 guys. So I think Tennessee will probably look to add maybe at least one high school guy or maybe, you know, a transfer that's a young transfer and would maybe be happy to come in and sit and learn and kind of try to improve. So I think Tennessee will maybe, you know, obviously depends. If they don't get Lanier, I think they'll be looking for another high impact guard. But if they are able to land Lanier, I think at that point they're kind of turning to more project guys and guys that will be, you know, happy to come in and maybe not play a huge role next season, because it feels like Tennessee is close to rounding out what its top 10 guys are going to be on next year's roster.
Yeah. Again, just recapping sort of the movement that Tennessee has had so far on the basketball roster since the end of the season. Don't connect Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan James leave from graduation. Tobe Awaka enters the transfer portal, ends up at Arizona. Freddie DeLeon enters the portal, ends up at Penn State. DJ Jefferson enters the portal, ends up at Longwood. And then Jonas Adu enters the portal, still to be announced where he goes. Returning from the previous roster will be Jordan Ganey, a senior, Zakai Ziegler, a senior, Jemai Meshack, a senior, Cade Phillips, a sophomore, JP Estrella, a sophomore, and Cameron Carr, a sophomore. So the six guys that are returning, you got three seniors and three sophomores. Bishop Boswell, the four-star guard, consensus four-star guard from On3247 ESPN and Rivals. He will be joining the roster. And then again, we've talked about Tennessee's three transfer portal pickups so far, with Hofstra forward Darlinston Dubar, Ohio State center Felix Okpara, and Charlotte forward Igor Milicic Jr. So a lot of movement so far. And just, I mean, what's it been? Just over a month or so. A lot of things going on right now, but that is a little bit of an update about the two recent players that Tennessee has gotten commitments from. Again, Felix Okpara last week and Igor Milicic Jr. today on Monday.
Yep, that's the perfect, you know, recap of it so far. I guess the one other thing, Cade Tyson, the Belmont transfer, visited Tennessee. He committed to North Carolina on Sunday. Not a massive surprise there. It felt like North Carolina was kind of the team to beat the entire time, but the Vols gave him something to think about. But he ends up landing in North Carolina, and those, everybody who has visited Tennessee in the portal at this point has made a decision. Tennessee's obviously landed three guys in Milicic, Okpara, and Dubar, and then they miss out on Tyson. I guess one last thing to add on Milicic, he did take multiple visits too. Also visited Nebraska and Baylor, and then committed to Tennessee. So that was kind of his top three.
There you go. Tennessee wins a battle right there. One of the names that we just mentioned, though, made an announcement today. Tobe Awaka, we just said, he is heading to a West Coast power. He is heading to Arizona. So you will certainly see more of Tobe Awaka next year around tournament time when you're watching all of the games. Were you surprised by this? Any just initial quick thoughts on Tobe Awaka going to Arizona? Obviously, a few teams were in the running. We're still waiting to hear what Jonas Adu decides to do. But Tobe Awaka going to a prominent team a little bit out west.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not super surprised. That just like Jonas Adu, I expected him to be a very highly coveted guy. Arizona lost their starting center Omar Ballo to Indiana in the transfer portal earlier this offseason. You know, I don't know exactly what else they've brought in or what else they have coming back. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, how guaranteed Awaka's role will be. That's the part that I think, you know, from a Tennessee standpoint of a guy that transferred because he wanted a little more certain playing time would be interesting to look into more. But I'm not totally sure exactly what that looks like. Arizona will be in the Big 12 next year, obviously, with all the conference relocation and man, that conference is going to be, I would expect to be the best in the country. So I'm sure it'll be, like you said, obviously everybody who watches college basketball, at least casually, will be watching them in NCAA tournament, but probably a lot of opportunities to watch them in some good games before then too. So it'll be really interesting to see how he does.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, for the Jonas Adu side of things, there's been rumblings about Baylor, maybe Arkansas with the John Calipari staff. We'll just have to wait and see what he decides to do. But certainly stay tuned to see whenever that does get announced, whenever it does happen, stay tuned to Rocky Top Insider and we will let you know where he goes. One last thing on the basketball side of things before we move into football. Just a as two basketball fans, as two fans of the game, you're a somewhat fan of Chicago. You got a team over there in that area. Just a congratulations to Candace Parker. She announced her retirement from the WNBA this week. Not just a Tennessee legend, not just a women's basketball legend, but a basketball great. Somebody who has made the transition to television. She does so many great things. I believe on the TNT pregame show, she's a phenomenal analyst. And you know, phenomenal analysts are hard to come by, but she can really break down the game. She connects with the audience. She's one of the few people that can go at Shaquille O'Neal, which is always entertaining television as well, but a superstar here in Knoxville, certainly one of Tennessee's most loved icons, but again, announces her retirement, I believe, on Sunday afternoon. So again, just from two basketball fans, just a big congratulations to Candace Parker. Maybe this is even sort of a not that I know all my history, but maybe this is even sort of a passing the torch to Caitlin Clark. Obviously, Candace Parker been one of the absolute greats in women's basketball over the last decade plus or so, and now there's some new blood coming into the league. So out with the old and in with the new, but congratulations to Candace Parker on just a phenomenal career and multiple championships, MVPs, all the accolades you could ever ask for. So quite the career.
Yeah, no doubt. 16 years in the WNBA and truly, I mean, you said it all very well, a legendary career. I mean, the one anecdote that I will read off, and, you know, I heard about this or kind of knew loosely about this before, but writing about her retirement yesterday, looked more into it. Candace Parker's 2008, just unbelievable. I don't know if it, well, I mean, I guess Caitlin Clark maybe, or maybe other people have done something to match it, but the way, so 2008, Tennessee wins back-to-back national championships. Candace Parker.
Okay.
Averaged 21.3 points, 8.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 2.3 steals per game. Tennessee wins the national championship. She wins the Wooden Award. She's the player of the year in college basketball. That's her junior year. She declares pro after that, goes pro. And you know the way that it falls, where obviously that was in March or maybe in early April, I guess, when the Final Four was. But then the WNBA season starts in the summer and goes into the fall a little bit. So then she plays her rookie season there. She earned rookie of the year. Honors, first team all WNBA honors, averaged 18.5 points, 9.5 rebounds, 3.4 assists per game. Just an just unbelievable run of, I don't know exactly how long that would have been, 6 months or so. And talk about seamlessly adjusting to professional basketball like she did. I mean, that's pretty incredible achievement. Obviously, that happened a long time ago. But as someone that was all of 9 years old in 2008, getting to kind of look into detail at some of that stuff yesterday was pretty jaw-dropping, even if I loosely knew a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's a remarkable run. I don't care if you're a, you know, you're going college basketball to the NBA, college basketball to the WNBA. I mean, that's an unprecedented run. Candace Parker, one of the people who have paved the path for players like Caitlin Clark to now walk on and get some of the fruits of that labor. So Candace Parker will always be an icon of the basketball world. I hope we get to see her a lot more on television. Maybe she'll go into coaching one day, and I think that would be great. But I like watching her on the TNT broadcast. I think she's great. I like watching that. I'm not a huge NBA guy or anything, but when I see those clips, when I see those highlights, I'm at least more likely to tune in because I think she brings something great to the table. So we will see what is next for her career. But obviously, maybe just some well-deserved time off after 16 years in the WNBA. Speaking from going to the college ranks to the professional ranks, well, you had three Tennessee football players who were selected in the NFL draft over the weekend. Again, nine more Tennessee players signed an undrafted free agent contract. We might tell you a little bit about that more coming up, but let's talk about the three selections. Jalen Wright goes to the Miami Dolphins in the fourth round. Joe Milton goes to the New England Patriots in the sixth round. And I believe from our own Daniel Lewis of the Rocky Top Insider family, there was maybe around like six or so picks from Tom Brady. I love that storyline, even if it amounts to absolutely nothing. I just think it is hilarious. And then Kamal Haddon rounds out Tennessee's trio with a six-round pick to the defending champions, the Kansas City Chiefs. He'll go match up with Trey Smith over there in Kansas City. That brings Tennessee, excuse me, That brings Josh Heupel's draft total to 13 in these first 3 years that his players have been draft eligible. Tennessee had five go in 2022, five go in 2023, and then these three go in 2024 as well. Next year is going to be a massive draft, I think, for Tennessee, you know, including what some are projecting to be the number one overall pick in the draft with James Pierce Jr., who is seemingly set up to have a great season at Tennessee here coming up next. But talking about those three guys, Wright, Milton, and Haddon, I know I certainly have my thoughts. Any broad thoughts on any one of those guys? I'll let you take your pick on which direction you want to go.
Yeah, no, I kind of liked something about all three landing spots, to be honest.
Yeah, I did too. I did too.
You know, I guess I'll just hit them kind of in quick hit order, but Jalen Wright, I mean, I think it's hard not to be excited about the possibility of him and Mike McDaniel's Dolphins offense. You know, obviously they do have two running backs, but Raheem Mostert is getting a lot older, and Devon Achane, you know, both of those guys really had some injury concerns last year. So I'm sure he'll get opportunities there, and that's an exciting offense to play and an offense that prioritizes speed. Obviously Jalen Wright has that.
I think with that, just to follow up on that, I think with the Wright, like, I think he's the type of running back that you don't necessarily have to, you know, with what they have already, you don't need to create new sets. You don't need to have specific plays. Like, I think he fits in the exact same mold that Achane and Raheem Mostert pretty much fit in. I think he's a plug-and-play guy. If they need reps, if they need a spell, if they get injured here and there, I think he's a guy who will fit seamlessly in. And like you said, in that Mike McDaniel's offense, sort of like a Josh Heupel offense, I think that's going to be really nasty in seeing what Jalen Wright can do with the ball. Some of me wishes he would maybe go to, I don't know, there's a couple teams out there that don't have a starting running back. There's one team in particular that just signed an old running back, and I mean that both literally and figuratively about based to where he was on the team. I don't know. That team might be residing in Dallas, Texas. So some teams maybe needed that true number one. So some of me wishes that maybe he had gone to a spot where we could see him as the guy right off the bat. But I think if you're looking for a if you're looking for excitement, if you're looking for flash in a bottle, he is certainly that. And we'll have to check in with Jack Foster, our resident self-proclaimed fantasy football expert, about what Jalen Wright's fantasy potential could be. I'd imagine it's pretty low right now, but who knows? He's a home run hitter with a speedy offense, and we'll see what that can do.
Yeah, I might be a guy to have to just be monitoring on the waiver wire and
a monitor guy. Yeah.
And then with Kamal Haddon, I mean, it's, you look at Kansas City and they had two star corners last year and neither of them are on the team. Jalen Johnson goes to the Bears in free agency. Legarius Sneed gets traded to the Titans. And I'm sure the Chiefs aren't banking on a 6th-round draft pick to be their starting corner or anything, be a starting corner for him or anything like that this year. But you would imagine there's going to be some level of opportunity there, or at least for, you know, being a guy drafted in the 6th round. There's probably as much opportunity in Kansas City as there are, or there would be in just about any other place. So to me, that makes that an intriguing place. And then, you know, obviously there's with Joe Milton, there is the, Gerard Mayo. Gerard McCoy and Gerard Mayo.
Yeah.
Getting mixed up there. There's a Gerard Mayo Tennessee tie. And, you know, I doubt that means a whole lot in the long term, but, you know, it's funny in the Lindsey Nelson Stadium press box on Thursday night with the draft going on, we're talking about it. And, you know, one thing we kind of said that would make sense for Joe Milton is to land somewhere in the AFC so he could be a scout team quarterback for Josh Allen when you talk about his build and arm strength. So I'm sure he's not going to, you know, be able to just stick around from that truly, but, you know, that's an interesting landing spot for him. And, you know, just the quarterback nature as a whole has kind of changed now that you can carry that third quarterback that doesn't count against your 55 man roster. So that'll all be interesting. So to me, things to like about all three landing spots for the Tennessee players that were drafted.
Yeah. And even though it was 3 rounds later than what Hendon Hooker was last year, Hendon Hooker had the unfortunate duty of having to go to Detroit, right? A place where they already had an established quarterback. And certainly the first year that Hendon Hooker is there, Jared Goff takes the Lions all the way to the NFC Championship game, I believe it was, on a really nice run and one that projects to be going forward in the future. New England hasn't had the greatest run of quarterbacks here lately. Obviously, Mac Jones, we'll see what Drake May can do. But I think when you're sitting in a position like that, don't worry, you won't have to quote me. I'm not going to be on the record saying that Joe Milton is going to, you know, be in the battle with Drake May for the starting quarterback or anything, but it's at least a little bit of a different situation where you might have a little bit more flexibility, or you might at least just have a little bit less weight on your shoulders. You can just kind of go out there and play knowing that, hey, guys are somewhat on the same level. At least it's not a solidified starter type of situation. So I certainly am not projecting that Joe Milton is going to overtake Drake May here in his rookie season, but I just find it a fascinating landing spot as New England drafts two quarterbacks in the same draft. And then last but not least, Kamal Haddon, and his story at Tennessee is really one that is going to stick with me just in sort of the way that it all developed. For a guy who didn't make too much noise during his first few years of his career, a guy that really broke out of the mold during his final season at Tennessee, but it wasn't a complete season at Tennessee. He got hurt in mid-October. That was the season-ending injury, but then to still turn that into a six-round draft pick, I think is really something special, and he did flash just boatloads of talent last year before that injury, so really interested to see what happens there, but interested to see what happens with all these guys. I think that Jalen Wright will certainly see probably the most on the field next year. Maybe Kamal Haddon can get some good reps. Joe Milton sort of sitting behind Drake May as the Patriots figure out what their next quarterback, their next high draft pick is going to look like with the former North Carolina product, but I think three good landing spots. I think it certainly could have been worse, like you see with other players and certainly other quarterbacks around the draft.
Yeah, certainly. And I think in some ways it's better, in some ways it's worse for Milton in a spot like that compared to Hooker. You know, maybe in the short term it's better with an injury or something. Same time, I mean, it's Jared Goff still doesn't have a contract extension, and he's going into, I believe, his last year under contract. So, you know, it's the classic business element of it. It's classic in your old book with Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. Zeke Elliott's making 8 times more money or whatever it is, he's going to be the starting quarterback, or he's going to be starting running back. And Drake May, you spend a number 3 overall pick on him. Joe Milton can go out, play him all through training camp. Drake May is going to be the starting quarterback because of what they've invested in him. But obviously, it's still not anybody that's solidified, and injuries happen and stuff like that happens. Obviously, it would give Milton a chance.
Yeah, and you know, to that point as well, if Drake May is getting his second contract with New England, it might mean that Joe Milton is not, right? It's something like that. So you're right. That timeline that they're both going on and they're both being evaluated on at the same time is there doesn't leave a ton of wiggle room right there. If New England likes, if they like Drake May and they get him to that second contract, I think they feel pretty good about what's going forward. Although I don't believe that Robert Kraft Jr. is necessarily an owner that is necessarily too at risk of getting fired based on whether the quarterbacks pan out or not. But again, we've got some more NFL draft coverage over at RockyTopInsider.com. And then again, Tennessee had the 9 players sign the undrafted free agent contracts as well. So we will follow that along the way. Tennessee Titans land 2 of those with Jabari Small and Gabe Judy-Lawley. Again, sir, some people certainly probably happy to see a couple of familiar names getting to stay in state for however that run lasts. That's pretty much it for NFL draft coverage, unless you got anything else on that trio of players.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, the one thing I'll add about the Titans guys, Gabe Judy-Lawley obviously started his college career at Vanderbilt, so he's back in Nashville, and Jabari Small is a Memphis native who came across the state to East Tennessee, now in Middle Tennessee. So some state of Tennessee ties for the Vols or for the 2 Tennessee players that signed with Titans.
Last but not least, while you were saying that, I had the chance to pull up the rest of the 7 undrafted free agents. So we'll just go ahead and read that out super quick. Aaron Beasley to the Seattle Seahawks. D. Williams also to the Seattle Seahawks. Jacob Warren reuniting with Joe Milton in New England. He is with the Patriots. Jalen McCullough reuniting with Byron Young out in Los Angeles with the Rams. Jeremiah Crawford to the Carolina Panthers. Ramel Keaton to the Las Vegas Raiders. And McCallum Castles to the Philadelphia Eagles. That rounds out Tennessee's 12 players on their way to the NFL to see what comes next from that bunch. One more story of the day, still on the football side of things, and that is a little bit of transfer portal movement from the Tennessee football team, as Christian Conyer announces today, Monday afternoon, that he is set to enter the transfer portal. He's wrote about it on social media. Here's what he said, quote, "I have entered the transfer portal with 3 years of eligibility remaining. I'd like to thank Coach Heupel and the University of Tennessee for the chance to play in the SEC. I appreciate the support of the coaching staff, my teammates, and fans. Thank you, Vol Nation." Christian Conyer was a three-star prospect in the class of 2023. He was from Bowling Green, Kentucky, played his high school ball at South Warren. He committed to Tennessee in July 2022, ended up being an early enrollee that December, but there was a lot of frequent visits to both Kentucky and Tennessee in that sort of three, four, five final months leading into that July 2022 commitment. So again, after only 1 year at Tennessee, he decides to enter the portal, where we will see what his next move ends up being. Spent all of last season during his freshman year as a reserve defensive back, played the cornerback position, actually saw appearances in 10 games as a true freshman, obviously mainly during special teams, as he recorded one tackle on the season. So, and I think the thing with Conyer is that when Tennessee's season ended, you knew that there was going to be a lot of turnover coming from that defensive back position. You thought that a lot of these young guys might have a chance to get an opportunity for the next set, but Tennessee also did their work and they bolstered their secondary through the transfer portal. They brought in Jermod McCoy from Oregon State. They brought in Jalen McMurray from Temple. Both of those guys played the cornerback position. You've also have some guys that Tennessee has been waiting on to rise up, like a Jordan Thomas, maybe like a Jordan Matthews as well. So I think ultimately Christian Conyer found himself in a place where he was playing it as a special teams or he had a reserve role, but I just don't know if there was a ton of opportunity to move up. So it looks like he will be heading out to find a new home. He is Tennessee's second sort of big transfer portal entry in this spring window alongside Elijah Herring, Tennessee's leading tackler, the linebacker from last year, and then also Cameron Douglas, a defensive lineman from in-state, and then cornerback Malik Ganaway also entered the portal during the spring window. But again, those two guys, definite reserves, not necessarily as much headway as Elijah Herring made. So that's Christian Conyer. He enters the portal after one season on Rocky Top as he searches for a new home.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a huge loss from a standpoint. I don't think he was going to be – he was very high on Tennessee's depth chart, but I will say Tennessee doesn't have a whole lot of depth at cornerback really at all. So from that standpoint, I do think – it is a big blow to depth, and it felt like he was certainly behind Ricky Gibson and Jordan Matthews, two guys he came in with. So one that you kind of note, it's certainly no reason to hit the panic button by any means. And yeah, you said it. I mean, that was a complete Tennessee-Kentucky battle. He's from Kentucky. It'll be interesting to see where he lands in the transfer portal and if it, you know, might end up being Kentucky.
Maybe. All right, my friend, I think that pretty much wraps us up. That takes care of all the news and notes I got. Hey, by the way, I don't know if this news had broken during the time of your baseball podcast. If it did, you can just kind of shoo me off. But I want to get your reaction to Jordan Beck being called up to the major leagues, to the Colorado Rockies. Ben McKee of 247 Sports, Go Vols 247, was the first to break that news today. But Jordan Beck headed up to the big leagues. I could be completely wrong on this, but I think he's maybe Tennessee's second player from that team to hit the bigs behind Ben Joyce. Does that sound correct to you?
Trey Lipscomb as well, so third.
Trey Lipscomb.
Yeah, no, it maybe it had broken, but we hadn't seen it before before that we podcasted, so we didn't talk about it on there. But yeah, super exciting. I don't think it was – it felt like that was going to happen at some point this season. I know he
it
was,
did.
Colorado's spring training player of the year. And then the Rockies have just been off to a dreadful start this season. So it felt like he was going to get an opportunity at some point. It is a little bit ironic, I guess, that, you know, he gets called up because Nolan Jones is going on the IL and I'm thinking of somebody else, but that's how I got called up. I was thinking of a different Jones who played at Vanderbilt, but that's Spencer Jones who plays for the Yankees. But no, Nolan Jones, he gets called up for an injury, which I guess if, you know, kind of makes sense at this time of the year, and we'll see if he, like we just said, with a not very good team and not very good offense, if it's not one of those things where right when Jones gets back, Beck's going to go back down. He's going to have plenty of opportunities to try to earn his spot, and it'll be exciting to see how he can do.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see him swing that bat in the Colorado altitude, which he has been doing plenty of, which is why he's getting his call up to the big leagues, but excited to see that happen on the big stage as well. So, all right, my friend, I think that is pretty much going to wrap us up. Again, You and Jack Foster took care of the RTI Baseball podcast earlier today. We just got finished talking about a little bit of Tennessee football and basketball news as things roll forward. I think that about wraps us up. So what do you say we head back? We wrap this thing up. We get back to work. We will get these uploaded for the people. Obviously, it'll be uploaded by the time you're listening to this. Thank you for making it to the end if you are listening to this. But I'm good to go. What about you?
That's all I got.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, thank you so much for listening to the RTI Press Pass podcast again. We got a lot of stuff coming up this fall, obviously covering everything Tennessee football and basketball offseason related. And then the Tennessee baseball team is absolutely rolling right now as Jack and Ryan bring you all the coverage from Lindsey Nelson Stadium, from wherever it might be that the Vols are playing as they continue their quest for the postseason to see if they can reach a little bit of success there. So stay tuned to RockyTopInsider.com. If you want to follow Ryan Shumpert, you can do that at RShump00 on Twitter. If you want to follow myself, you can do that at Rick_Butler on Twitter. But just make sure you're checking in with RockyTopInsider.com each and every day for the latest Tennessee news, notes, and coverage. Thank you so much for listening to the RTI Press Pass podcast. For Ryan and Rick, we will see you back for the next one.